One of the difficulties for me in my life is that I have a really bad mix of being a dreamer and a pragmatist, a realist. And I go back and forth between those two stages. Sometimes I dream that things could be that just can't be. And everybody looks at me like I'm an idiot when I dream, when I'm in my dream stage, because I am an idiot when I'm in my dream stage. And the other side of it is that sometimes I become a realist, and to be a realist in this life, you really kind of have to be a pessimist. You just kind of have to figure out it's whatever's going to happen isn't going to be good, and it's always going to be bad, and it's going to be bad at the least opportune time. And so I jump back and forth between those depending on what day it is and what week it is and what time of year it is and what time of my life I'm in. And the truth is way down inside, I believe in dreaming. I believe in possibilities. And as long as there's God, I can never give up on dreaming dreams. On just hoping that things will turn out better than I thought they could. We have been in a rather strange relationship with the church next door that rents a space to us for a long time. And through either a whole series of miscommunications or a whole series of divine providence or just a whole series, I don't know. We've kind of gotten to this place where they've asked us to leave again. And so as of April 30, we have no place to meet. And and so that puts me in a real strange place. And so the realist part of me runs to the realist part and says, well, okay, we got to get to work. We got a month, and we got to find a place. And, you know, I've already got some backup plans. And, you know, the park is beautiful this time of year. And we probably can't turn the music up real loud, you know, because the neighbors will complain, but maybe the neighbors will like it, and they'll just come over, and it'll be the drawing card, and then we'll have one guy out there throwing rocks at us in the park. But, you know, the park is a cool place, and you know what? I'm actually thinking that's what we should do. We should actually have church in the park. I think that would be fun. But then those monsoons come, so that's the pragmatist in me understands that when the monsoons come, being out in the park with electronic equipment in your hands for our band is probably not a good thing, you know? And we like our band members, and so we just hate to see lightning strikes, and, you know, we got enough frizzy hair around here. We don't need more. And so...
That's until July.
And so I don't know, you know? And then the dreamer in me says God's going to just provide an incredible place for us at no cost because we have no money. And it's just going to fall out of heaven, and it's going to be beautiful, and it's going to be better than anything we can imagine, and it's going to have parking spaces for gazillions of cars, and it's going to have ways to expand, and we're going to be able to have everything we ever dreamed of, including the garage for Jeff, and let's see, what were some of the other things that we've talked about? The coffee shop and the theater and the garden for Emily, and you know, we just and the artist studios, and then all the little house lazy boys for everybody, yeah.
Barca
loungers. Do we have to have lava lamps with the Barca loungers? Because okay. And so the dreamer in me actually believes that could all happen, and that could happen in a month. And then I run back to my very pragmatic side, my very realist side, and I say, yeah, right, yeah, like that's going to happen. So you know what? We've got these kind of, they're okay backup plans, but they're not the best backup plan, and we'll just probably end up doing one of those. We'll settle. and then I don't want to settle. And I want to jump off the cliff, and I want to hang on to the cliff at the same time. And the problem with dreaming and the problem with realism is you can't jump off the cliff and hang on to it at the same time. Well, you can, but you've got to be schizophrenic. And so you can't do that. And so you have to do one or the other. You have to be, in the end, a true believer, or you have to, in the end, be a realist and take matters into your own hands. And tonight we're looking, isn't this strange, at Jesus in John chapter 6, and we find the story of that's referred to or known as the feeding of the 5,000. It says, sometime after this, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee, that is the Sea of Tiberias, and a great crowd of people followed him because they saw the miraculous signs he had performed on the sick. Then Jesus went up on the mountain and sat down with his disciples. The Jewish Passover feast was near. A great crowd of people followed Jesus because he did wild, crazy things that we only dream about, that never actually we otherwise see. We go through these rather mundane, routine, day after day kind of lives, and then all of a sudden something spectacular happens, and so we get excited. When Keith sprayed Pam spray on my knees and they started hurting after prayer, I think that's just hilarious, because that is like the most incredible miracle that I've experienced. And so, you know, now I want to think, you know, does Pam Spray have magical qualities? And is Eric's prayer, I mean, is he really a prayer giant that we've been, you know, wasting our time on this artistic stuff that he does and on his preaching thing? We ought to just have him in a prayer and anointed healing ministry and forget all this other stuff. You know, is there a miracle there that's, is it replicable? You know, do miracles get replicated? Can we just keep having the same miracles over and over again? Now, if anybody else has bad knees, you know, are we going to have, like, people with bad knees from all over the world coming to sit in the Seneca house and get their knees sprayed by Keith with Pam spray and prayed for by Eric? Because if that happens and everybody's knees are healed, that's going to be cool, you know, and people will flock to that. At least everybody with bad knees will. And then we'll start spreading out into, you know, thighs and shin splints and, you know, sprained ankles. And, you know, who knows where it could go. And it could turn into something big. We're crowds. And you know what? Crowds love miracles. We love inexplicable things. We love things that just don't make sense, that have to be because of who God is. But the realist and the pragmatist in all of us says, yeah, but that doesn't happen in our lives. It doesn't happen to me. It happens to other people. I heard, you know, and matter of fact, have you always noticed that when people have always heard of a guy who this happened to? They've never actually had it happen to them. It's rare that somebody says, oh, this happened to me. Most of the time they heard of a person who heard of a person who this happened to. And then when you ask them, well, who did you hear that from? And you go to that person, they say, well, they heard it from a person. And then that person heard it from another person. And you begin to doubt, because we're realists, we're pragmatists, we begin to doubt that anything ever really happened. Because, you know, we're also cynics. And so pretty soon we hear enough of these stories that don't come true, that aren't real, that aren't right, and we just become cynical. And we doubt everything. And we miss miracles because we doubt them. We doubt that there's even a potential for a miracle or a possibility of a miracle. We don't believe in miracles. Crowds came because they saw miraculous signs. And Jesus went up on the mountainside, sat down with his disciples. The Passover feast was near. The Passover feast celebrates, let's guess, the Passover. Perfect. The Passover, and the Passover was one of the most miraculous things, a demonstration of God's amazing power, and this feast is upon them. It's near. It's about to happen. And so there's the whole concept of the Passover, the remembrance of the Passover. The Passover is fresh in the people's mind because they're beginning to prepare for the Passover. They're remembering the Passover. The Passover was when God killed the firstborn of all the Egyptians and passed over the homes of the Israelites, and it was the last straw that finally brought Pharaoh tumbling down and sent the Israelites out, away from their slavery, and towards the Promised Land. It was miraculous. It was amazing. And that's in the back of people's minds as they're sitting down here. They had to prepare a meal, and we talk about that meal, that they had to, and they had to be dressed, and they had to be ready to go when that night came. The Israelites had to have their staff in their hand. They had to have their clothes on, their shoes on. They had to eat this food ready to move, ready to get, ready to go, because God knew what he was about to do, and it was about to happen, and this about-to-happening event, the Passover, once it happened, they had to be ready to move quickly. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming toward him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Philip is sort of the supply guy for the disciples. He's kind of one of those guys who, he's a pragmatist. He's a realist. I love him for that. He's kind of got that whole concept of making sure that everything gets provided for, everything gets taken care of. Matter of fact, later on in John, we read a place where Philip says to Jesus, "Hey, show us the Father, and then we'll finally just have this, we'll believe everything." In other words, show us God up front, up close, personal, and then we'll believe and everything will be okay. So Philip is that dreamer. He wants to dream about what could be. He wants to see God, but he's a realist too. And I think Jesus brings this question to him, "Where should we buy bread for these people to eat?" And he asks him that question as a test. One of the hardest concepts for me is this idea that God tests us, that God is in the business of testing us often, that he tests our faith, that he tests how we think, that he tests how we respond. He's looking at us. He tests us, which is not to say that he tempts us, because we kind of make that jump. Because we often have temptation and testing side by side. And this truth is that whenever we're being tested, the tempter comes along and tempts us right next to that test. He puts them side by side. What God intends for good, there's another side that intends for evil. And so that temptation, there's always that temptation to not believe in God. There's always that temptation that's there. To not have faith, to not be a true believer, and I like that the question is, where should we buy bread for these people to eat? There is no place to buy bread. This is up in the mountain. It's far from the closest village. It's not possible for them to buy bread. It's not possible. It's not going to happen. And Jesus' question is, in that realm, sort of a stupid question, because it's like, it's sort of the, "Well, duh, no, we're not going to do it," kind of is the answer. It's like, "Well, look around, Jesus, hello, you know, you see any bread stores are here? You know, I mean, this is not going to happen." And so there's that tension there. Philip answered him, 8 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each one to have a bite. That's the reality of the condition. If we gave up 8 months' wages, we could buy enough if there was a place to go. We could buy just enough bread so that everybody could have a bite. Which, you know, is sort of irritating anyway, because if you get a bite of bread, you're always hungrier than if you got no bread at all. You know, I mean, if you get a taste of something, you want more. It's like, I mean, that's the curse of these diet things. It's just killing me, right? Because it's what's so great about Atkins. You can eat as many eggs and bacon and, you know, whatever as you want. But all those other diets, it's like, you know, they give you this little plate of food. And I'm going, I am 6 feet eight, 300 pounds. That's a swallow, man. And I'm going to be hungry in like a minute, not even an hour, you know. And so, like, there's no way that's going to satisfy. And, of course, you can go to the real question, which is, why do we have to feed them anyway? I mean, we don't owe them anything. They're coming here looking for something. They're looking for a miracle. They're looking for healing. They're looking for the presence of this really cool guy. But, hey, they're on their own for food. Let them work it out themselves. It's their problem if they didn't come prepared. I think most of us have those areas where God's testing us, testing our faith. And one of the things that I think God's calling us to do in this is to recognize that we do not have the resources, that we cannot provide for ourselves, that no matter what, I don't have the resources. So you know what? You guys are all looking at Eric and I as your leaders and as your leadership team, and you're saying, okay, guys, it's up to you to provide a place for us. And we're all going, oh, no. Because we don't know how to do that. I mean, we didn't go to how to find a place for an emerging church conference, and they taught us all this, and we just go to the book and look it up, and then, you know, money falls from the right sources, and we go negotiate deals and contracts. We're amateurs. Translate idiots. You know, we don't know what we're doing. We don't know how to do this. And so you follow us, And you're nuts, because to follow us is to follow people who don't know. And you know what? In this world, we pride and we follow, we take great pleasure in following people who know what they're doing. We have some great debates over, you know, like the presidential debate over who knows what they're doing. But most of us get that true believerism at some point. And we say, okay, this guy knows what he's doing, or this girl knows what she's doing, or this person over here knows what they're doing, or, you know, the dog that seems to know what he's doing. And we follow whatever that is, you know, whoever that is, because we want to have confidence in people. We want to make sure that they know what they're doing. Then we put our trust in them. And what God calls us into is not putting trust in anybody, which, at least not that kind of trust, that he wants his face on your leaders' faces so that you will look to us, sure, for leadership, but look past us into his face and trust him for your provision, for the provision of this community, that you'll trust him for that. A first part of that, clearly, is assessing just how much you lack in being able to solve the problem. As you look at those things where you're being tested in your life, be realist. Be a realist about how inadequate you are to solve your own problem, to find your own remedy, to work your way through the maze. Be a realist about that. Be brutal about that. If you want to be a realist about something, be a realist about that. Understand just what you don't have. Philip is right on. See, when you take a test, you either pass the test or you fail the test, and when I first read this, I wasn't sure whether Philip was passing or failing. I mean, does Jesus give him an A for this answer, or does Jesus say, wrong answer, sorry, you lose. Bye-bye, you know. But the more I read it, I think what Jesus wanted from Philip was the understanding, Philip's understanding, that he did not have what he needed in order to do the job. That there was not, it was not possible, that there was no possibility for his provision to be enough. Another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up, "Here's a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fishes, but how far will they go among so many?" You know, you got to love Andrew, and you got to love the dreamer in Andrew. I mean, here's my kind of guy. He's a dreamer. Well, we got, 5 barley loaves and 2 fishes. We got 5,000 people. it could work, you know. I mean, there's just some hope in that guy. You know, there's some hope in the middle of what seems like disaster and seems like it's not possible. It's not even conceivable. Here's a guy who's bringing some resources. You know, well, we got this much. Let's see what else we can raise, you know. And boy, do we want to do that, you know. We got 5 loaves. We got 2 fish. Let's see, who else can chip in a little? You know, we can take care of this problem. If we all just share and share alike, like kindergarten, then everybody gets a little, you know, everybody will get fed and everybody will get happy. But then, you know, this is all we got. I mean, this is like the sum total of our resources. This is the best we can do. But I don't want to put those resources down either. God doesn't call us to not use the little tiny resources that we do get from him. Those things that we do have. Eric's knowledge, my knowledge, your leader's knowledge, the skills, the talents, the abilities. Whatever it is you bring to the community, God invites you to bring those little gifts. Even when they're inadequate. Even when they're far less than will ever solve the problem. Even if you say, well, I'll bring this little bit, and then everybody else will bring their little bit, and it's still going to be way too little bit too much, you know, or not enough. I mean, it's just not going to be enough. No matter what we bring, if the whole gang of us, you know, I thought about that one day. I thought, you know, it'd be great to raise like $250,000 and just go out and buy the perfect building and the great place. And I'm thinking, you know what? I'm fairly sure I know what the average income in this group is. And if we all tithe 100% next year, I'm not sure we can raise $250,000. And that would leave that whole eating thing and sleeping and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's just not possible. I mean, it'd be nice, but it's not possible. Andrew has a hint of that true believerism, and he does bring what this little boy has to offer. What's great is, it's the little boy's stuff. You know, we sometimes wait till we are mature and that it's got to be the people who have it all together who can provide it all. For you kids, you got talents and gifts, and it may be your talents and gifts that solve our problem. It may not be the wise leaders, the hoary heads. Tom, where are you? Oh, Tom. It may not be the brilliant people, right? It may be the kids. How far will they go among so many? When I look at what we have in order to go find the place of our dreams, in order to do it, it's pretty paltry, folks. Pretty paltry. And here's Jesus. Have the people sit down. To sit down for dinner. Get ready. You know, go wash your hands. Get ready. Sit down. Spread your blanket. We're going to have a picnic. There was plenty of grass in that place. And the men sat down, about 5,000 of them. By the way, isn't it funny how God provided already just a beautiful place to sit down? They weren't sitting on the rocks. They weren't sitting out in the desert in the dirt. They were sitting nice, soft, beautiful grass. Pretty place. Nice place. God's already providing for them. God's been providing for them. God is in the business of providing. Providing doesn't happen later on. Providing doesn't happen as an event. Provision is there every day for us. We all walk past fields of grain, and we all drive by these, you know, orchards when we... I've got to go to Phoenix this week. I'm thinking about driving by those orchards again, you know? The cotton fields. There's provision all around us. Growing up on a farm... There was a great joy in growing up on a farm because you saw God's provision all the time in front of you. You know, now we kind of go to the store and we miss out the beauty of how God provides for his people, how he meets our needs. Jesus took the loaves, gave thanks. I think God's calling us to be thankful for the place we don't have yet. I think God's calling us to be thankful for something we haven't received yet. To walk in thankfulness. To walk in the expectation that God will provide for our needs. That he'll give us what we need. And that we should now already begin thanking him for what he's about to do. To give thanks to God when yet there is no evidence that God's going to provide for our needs. That's a hard thing to do when we walk into our personal struggles and into our personal pain and into our personal scary areas where we have this mountain of stuff that we can't possibly fix in our life, and to have to walk into that with a thankful heart for what God will do. Because you know what? Part of trust is waiting for him to do it. You know, God, meet me halfway. Give a little, I'll show you a little more trust. You give a little more, I'll show you a little more trust. You give a little more, I'll show you a little more trust. That's the bargain that most of us strike with God. That deal that we make, you show me, I'll show you. It's hard. Yeah, let's admit it. It's impossible for us to be thankful for what we are about to receive when we don't see any evidence on the table. And yet, I think that's what God calls us into. Jesus thanks God for the provision, and they begin to distribute to those who were seated as much as they wanted. And I don't know what that looked like, but I imagine there were baskets and that these small baskets had, you know, bread and fish in them, and then they just keep reaching in and they keep pulling it out, and they keep reaching in and they keep pulling it out, and it just goes on and on like that. And that as we reach in and pull out, there is always more. You know, I don't know that suddenly a huge amount of bread and fish fell out of heaven into a huge, you know, I think every time that act of reaching in allowed, you know, maybe there were never more than two fish and five loaves in those baskets. That every time we reach in and pull out, there's still provision there. There's still provision. And provision for the next person, and the next person, and the next person. And the beautiful part of this they could have as much as they wanted. The thing I know about God is that he provides for my needs. I look back on a life of 50-some years, and I see God's provision in my life. That he has always given me what I need. But sometimes I've wondered why he wouldn't just give me a little more. Give me what I wanted. I've mentioned before that our wants are insatiable. We never give up wanting. But in this instance, God provides all that they want. Their bellies are full. When they had all had enough to eat, he said to his disciples, "Gather the pieces that are left over. Let nothing be wasted." Maybe one of the sins of the village this past 2.5 years is that we've wasted this resource to some degree. We haven't maximized our use of it. We haven't taken advantage of it. We haven't used it to the extreme that we should have. Maybe we should have had more things like we had last night. Maybe we should have used what we had more effectively. Sometimes we take God's provision so for granted that we forget that he gives us these blessings not for us to just fill our stomachs, but to also use them to provide for others, to give back. Maybe we haven't been as gracious as we should have. God does not waste resources. I remember once closing a church down, and I remember all the sadness that happened when we closed this particular church. And I was, you know, I don't have a great record as a pastor. I've closed down more churches than I started. So, but what happened is, at that particular place, they had a beautiful facility, and they had a parsonage, a place where the pastor could live. And I remember that when that happened, that closing down, everybody was just devastated. They just thought, well, it's so depressing, you know. But you know what? All those people went to other churches and plugged in. And you know, that building, that church building became, it's another ministry now, and there's a church that's thriving in there, and lots of people finding relationship with God there. And that parsonage in the back has been turned into a halfway house for prisoners coming out of prison. Those people pay rent, and that rent has gone into helping fund ministries all over Arizona, new ministry starts. See, God's in the business of not wasting. Sometimes he moves resources around in ways that we just don't understand. And I think he's doing that now. He's moving this resource, this part of his kingdom, this beautiful part of his kingdom, to a new place. We just don't know where yet. There's no loss in that. There's no loss to the kingdom of God. There's only gain. When God shuffles resources around, he does it for the benefit of all of us and for his kingdom. So they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over for those who had eaten. After the people saw the miraculous sign that Jesus did, they began to say, "Surely this is the prophet who is to come into the world." Jesus, knowing that they intended to come and make him king by force, withdrew again to a mountain by himself. The people want constant miracles. We are people who want miracles. If we're honest, there's probably not a person in this room who doesn't wish that God would move in some spectacular way in their life and take away some problem that's killing them, some addiction that's driving them insane, some problems with their hearts, their minds, their resources, the mountains of stuff that they sit under. We're all looking for miracles. And we want to go capture the person who provides that miracle, and we want to do something with them. And just, these people said, "Hey, this is that prophet. This is that one. Let's get him. Let's be on his side. Let's have him feed us every day. Let's have him take care of all our needs." And it says that Jesus withdrew. He knew that they would take him and make them king by force. Jesus does not want to be made king of your life by force. He doesn't want to be made king because all he does is provide for you and provide for you and provide for you. He wants intimate, real, true relationship with you, like he has with his father. He withdrew to go spend time with his father. Over the next weeks, withdraw and spend time with our father and ask him what he would have you do, what offering you bring, and pray that he will provide for our needs and thank him in advance for what he's going to do. Let's pray. Father, you know our need. And 8 months' wages couldn't even pay for what we need. And